watching another episode of SNTR Presents or listening elsewhere on the podcast locations. If you like this content and my breakdowns of gaming news, be sure to hit subscribe and the bell button. And if you're listening to audio, be sure to share it with your friends, or you can support us directly on Anchor. Now, what we're going to be doing is breaking down the news about Halo Infinite Crunch. This came from an ex-employee at 343. Sony PS5 redesign. Apparently, they're considering redesigning it to help with production. And The Division Heartland was officially announced. And that is what we'll be breaking down in this video. So first, let's talk Halo Infinite Crunch. Now, before I get into this, I do want to say, I already have a video about my concerns about Halo Infinite. It was called Halo Infinite, Is It Doomed to Fail? And I got a lot of hate, and we got a lot of, you know, people that were angry about that video. A lot of the Halo fanboys kind of came out of the woodwork. And people need to understand, I want Halo Infinite to be amazing, but 343 hasn't done anything with the Halo property to give me a lot of confidence, and their initial trailer showing really didn't bode well with me or the general public, which led to them delaying it. Now, some of the info in this news might actually be good news for people that were really unimpressed with the trailer. So this was reported by The Gamer. We're finding out that despite the delay, Halo Infinite's development is being just as crunchy as its predecessors. This is according to a Reset Era user. They were translating a Chinese social media site. Someone was claiming to have worked at 343 Industries. Now, this is not confirmed whether or not they actually work there, but it's sounding very, very similar to other things we've heard about the game. Now, the video was in Mandarin, so The Gamer, when they reported on this, they're not able to independently verify the information. However, what's presented sounds like crunch conditions by all definitions, and nothing contained in this sounds outlandish or hyperbolic. It sounds pretty accurate to the way that games have been developed in the last couple of years and all of the inside information that's been coming out. So here's one of the quotes. The 343 team, especially the low-level employees, work very hard, and many of them have experienced working overtime until the early hours of the morning in the past few years. That is so generic and benign. There's no reason to suspect that that's not someone being truthful or accurate. It's very, very low key, but it is a window into what's been going on. Now, additionally, this is where the information gets more interesting. He called the company executives overly ambitious in wanting to create both a new game engine and a semi-open world game at the same time. This meant that resources were constantly being swapped back and forth as engine defects were discovered and needed to be corrected. This is where you're getting a window into why that initial trailer looks so, so bad, and this is why. The engine itself can be largely blamed for Halo Infinite's poor demo performance last year, as the engine hadn't been fully completed yet. So you have to imagine, they're building and fleshing out an engine as well as wanting the game to be quasi-open world, and that's pretty ambitious for a long-standing franchise. And that led to the demo looking like pretty mediocre garbage. Like, it didn't look very good. I thought it was meant to look pretty bad, and they were going to suddenly push a button and, like, up the ante and make it look next gen. It looked very bland and boring, and it was received so poorly. A month later, they announced the delay of Halo Infinite. However, the anonymous employee says he still thinks that Halo Infinite is going to be a great game when it eventually arrives later this year. Here's the quote. In fact, I think the finished product will still be great. The story is a big improvement, and the gameplay is much richer, though the development cycle is too long. Don't expect it to be an epoch-making masterpiece. This, to me, is well in line with some of my concerns for the game. It's going to be a mediocre expansion on Halo's universe that fans will probably love, but it will not shake up the industry. It will likely not create a bunch of new fans of Halo. And as he is saying, the cycle is too long. When a development cycle gets too long and too outside the original target window, fans get annoyed. People expect the game to be otherworldly, because if you keep delaying it, it creates passive hype and probably very overrealized and exaggerated expectations. So this does not bode well for Halo Infinite in my mind. The only good news in here that could be quote-unquote good news is that the demo looks so poor because the engine wasn't completed yet. That could very likely change both the performance and the appearance of the game when it finally lands, or it could make very little difference at all. As we read the one blog post about the weather and the day-night cycles, a lot of their focus is on stuff that isn't necessarily going to reinvent the gameplay loop in Halo or the combat. So We're going to continue to report on that when more news comes out. Now, this was big news for anybody who doesn't own a PlayStation 5, but it might be big news for you if you already own one. Okay, this was reported by DigiTimes. The PS5 is so popular that shoppers are still clamming for a PS5 restock 6 months after launch, but there could be a big change on the way that's worth waiting for. DigiTimes reports that the semiconductor manufacturer TSMC is planning on producing a redesigned PS5 at some point in the second and third quarters of 2022, and it could deliver considerably more power. So you're talking about within the year and a half to 2 year life cycle of the PS5 seeing a PS5 Pro in quotation marks. Now, none of this has actually been officially put in motion, but it is something that they are apparently looking into. Now, I don't think you would say these sorts of things publicly if it wasn't already privately in motion, but we don't have confirmation of that. The idea of a redesigned PS5 might seem a little premature given the current PS5 isn't even a year old yet, but the lack of stock and challenges around the semiconductor supply did see Sony CFO Hiroki Totoki, I'm probably not saying that correctly, suggested stock shortages could be overcome with electronic product design or finding other supply chain resources. So they're looking into essentially changing the components of the PS5 in order to fix supply line issues. Basically, if we can't get part A, switch it to part B and we can get that created quicker, it might speed things up. Now, this isn't going to have an immediate effect on stock issues for you if you are trying to get a PS5, okay? This is going to take a long time to actually get any traction. We're talking like end of 2022, you might be able to pre-order a new version or order a new version of the PS5. Here's a quote again from the CFO. For example, we could find maybe a second resource for semiconductors, or by changing design, we could cope with semiconductor shortages. This was said in a Sony's quarter four 2021 earnings call transcribed by Seeking Alpha. According to DigiTime sources, the redesigned PS5 could sport new silicon with a new semi-customized CPU from AMD built on 6-nanometer process node. The current piece of PS5 uses a 7-nanometer custom octa-core AMD Zen 2 processor. This is a bunch of techno garble, but what they're going to do is potentially switch from a 7 to a 6. This could see the PS5 delivering a performance boost and make a more efficient use of its power. In effect, we could be looking at a PS5 Pro. All this right now is obviously speculative and the timeline's not immediate, but this could be within the next year to, well, probably year and a half to 2 years, you could see an uptick not only in production of PS5s, but you're going to see them upping the performance and maybe just calling it a PS5 Pro. Lastly, this one kind of shocked us. We weren't expecting this. The Division Heartland has been announced. This kind of came out of nowhere. No one was expecting anything from Division anytime soon. They've obviously been, according here to PC Gamer, they recently recommitted themselves to Division 2. So this announcement sort of came out of left field. I wasn't expecting anything. I was expecting Division 2 to kind of keep humming along for a while. And PC Gamer reports here, that's not the only iron they've got in the particular Tom Clancy fire. In a big update on the future of the franchise, it revealed that an all-new free-to-play Division game called Heartland is also in development at its Red Storm studio. So keep in mind, this is going to be a standalone, all-new, but also free-to-play game, okay? Some of the speculation about this game is likely rooted in the fact that it's free-to-play. Here's the quotation. Having worked on Tom Clancy games since 1997, its extensive experience across numerous genres and games, most recently The Division and The Division 2, makes Red Storm a perfect fit for this project. Ubisoft said, Heartland is a standalone game that does not require previous experience with the series, but will provide an all-new perspective on the universe in a new setting. This is obviously where everybody's getting into speculation about, does that mean Battle Royale? Does that mean, you know, we're going to be getting some kind of a BR? I always thought the survival mechanic with the shrinking Blizzard Storm could have worked for a survival-esque Battle Royale, and it never really happened in Division 1. Survival was one of their most praised modes. Now, more here from the article, there are no details beyond that, but the bit about All New Perspective makes me think that a Division-based Battle Royale is a good bet. Activision has had massive success with Call of Duty Warzone, and EA's own free-to-play Battle Royale Apex Legends is a major hit. But Ubisoft's entry into the BR genre, Hyperscape, has been almost entirely forgotten. In fact, we included in our list of games you forgot released in 2020. I didn't just forget about Hyperscape. I didn't even know that was Ubisoft. I remember seeing the name, but I didn't know that was a Ubisoft game. That game is already out of the frame. Like, no, I don't even know what their player base is. Probably almost virtually non-existent. It's another Lawbreakers. It's another Radical Heights. Just completely out of the frame and forgotten. So a comeback for Hyperscape does not seem likely, but a battle royale built around the familiar Tom Clancy brand might give Ubisoft fresh traction. Now, here's the thing about battle royales. It's a super saturated market. So if they're attempting to step into this world, they're going to have to bring something fresh. Because you're competing with Fortnite, PUBG still pulls decent player base numbers. It's still one of the more played games on Steam. So you got PUBG, you got Fortnite, and you got Apex, and you got Big Daddy Call of Duty in the ring. And Activision recently appointed like all 10 of their studios to work on Call of Duty. So Ubisoft's got an uphill battle if they're wanting to enter the Battle Royale realm. So we'll wait for more details and info on the Heartland game, this standalone game, when it's going to launch, what it's going to look like. But again, the standalone free-to-play, as well as the new perspective language, might be pointing at a BR. If you're here right now in the live audience, don't go anywhere. I'm going to be reading through your responses to the poll. If you enjoyed this content, please hit subscribe and the bell button. If you're an existing subscriber, make sure your bell button is still set to all, because YouTube has switched it and people aren't getting notified. As always, I hope to see you in the next video. For listening to the second part of the show here, where we comb through poll responses about the micro news topics. If you're listening to this on any of the places where the podcast hits, SNTR Presents is a daily podcast. Try to feed those audio feeds. If you want to support the audio podcast and can never make it to a YouTube stream, you can always go to anchor.fm/SNTR Presents if you want to support the content directly with like a basically a paid subscription. Doesn't come with any perks, but it does support me directly. If you want to catch these live, SNTRLive.com will bring you light right to the main channel where we do the discussions. And today I asked, you know, Halo Infinite Crunch, the PS5 redesign, and the Division Heartland, what interests you the most? Now, the PS5 redesign is winning the poll results with 41%. Halo Crunch is right behind it with 38%. And then Division Heartland is kind of at the bottom there with just 20%. One of the main reasons, I think, was the structure of Division at this point in time. The setup of that game, I think lots of people are probably going to really want to wait for more details about it. So that's likely why that one isn't really high on the poll. Also, there was like no details. It was just a basic announcement about this planned game. So we are going to obviously comb through the poll responses and see what people have to say here. Birdface says, I was a big fan of the first Division. I was a big pusher of it as a Destiny competitor. I wanted a third-person, over-the-shoulder Ghost Recon feel again, and it was so much fun. Curious if Division can be a good BR. I'm actually curious about that. Like, would that format, would the movement, would the cover base, would the third person, would it work in a BR? Like, would it be able to, and I know people are gonna be like, well, Fortnite and these other games all started in third person. You are correct. But the more sort of slower paced, cover based, gear based content, I would think would be a, you know, a very, very interesting take on the BR environment. You know what I'm saying? Because it's competitive, you know. Two spot from John Lover says, show full design tees you're wearing now with standing. I mean, I don't like the stand. I mean, I'll show you very quickly. There you go. It's Wolverine fighting Omega Red. If you're interested, they have this shirt over there on 80s Tees. You can use the shirt command. It'll take you to the Marvel collection, but you can search for this shirt over there. Just be sure to use code LONO for 30% off anytime you go to 80stees.com. So, you never tried Survival in Division 1? It was a BR and it was amazing. First and foremost, it was not a BR. It wasn't. And yes, I played it a ton. I actually got pretty good at it. There were teamers constantly in solo, and I beat a group of them one day. It was really, really satisfying. But I would not classify the Division Survival as a BR. It was pretty small. It had PvE elements. Nothing was random other than where you showed up. It was pretty set. There were safe rooms. It was BR light. It was very, very BR light. There were elements of it, surely, that you would say are similar to a BR, but very, very BR light. BR is a battle royale. So I always thought they could take it to the main city and bring the snowstorm elements and turn it into a BR, right? That, I think, would have been, you know, extremely, would have been an extremely helpful pivot at the time, because BR was kind of taking off. However, I don't think the city would have been conducive to Battle Royale combat, because there'd just been too many people. There'd been a lot of funnel road fights, and, you know, you also have to worry about camping in a game like that. You know, it's, where can people hide? Where can people just kind of chill and you'll never find them? That could have been an element of challenge if they would have suddenly changed the city in the Division into a battle royale. I still think it would have worked. I think the shrinking blizzard, you know, they could have been like, man, the blizzard's getting worse. We got to move. And then that could have been your quote unquote shrinking circle. That, I think, could have been pretty cool. And I think people would have rallied around it. I really, really do. I think it would have been neat. And I think it would have been popular. But it would have only been popular and survived if it would have been designed well. I think that's one of the bigger challenges of BRs right now, is making them in a way where they've got longevity and they've got legs. Because a lot of the times a BR hits and people are like, oh, this is kind of new, this is kind of fresh. And then it literally just falls down and dies. If you think about the way that the handful that have come out recently, well, not even recently anymore, but like Realm Royale would be one. That one didn't go anywhere. Radical Heights didn't go anywhere. You know, it's the PvP environment in general is really, really tough to step into. Lawbreakers learn that as well. So, and as we said in our news report, Ubisoft tried to launch a BR, and it's already been forgotten. It was in 2020, and it was called, I don't even remember the name of it now. I got to go to the report here. It was called Hyperscape. Hyperscape was literally a BR that launched and is already basically forgotten. I don't even know what Hyperscape's numbers are, if any, if we go to Steam charts. It's probably non-existent, I would think, at this point. Hyperscape, oh, you can't get it on Steam. It would have been through Ubi, so we can't even get a player rating. I forgot, like, Ubi has their own launch with, like, Uplay and all that. So, yeah, I mean, unfortunately, the landscape is very, it's dead, says Butters. Yeah. It's probably already, you know, put a fork in it. It's already done. So, I mean, you can see it's a tough market to get into. It really, really is. It's not an easy nut to crack. So, you know, that's going to be a continued issue with any game that tries to step into the BR is saturation. Here's an article from Game Rant published 3 hours ago. YouTube introduces new features to compete with the Purple platform. The newest addition, which started rolling out for selected streamers yesterday, imports the sub-only chat option to Google's video platform. We've had that forever. According to a tweet from this guy, YouTube's head of gaming, the feature has been a big creator request for live streaming. Give streamers the option to restrict chat usage just to their subscribers. Oh, just subscribers, not members. Creators can switch the setting off and on at their leisure, even midstream, and can even add a minimum length of time that viewers need to be subscribed if they want to keep chatting with extra exclusives or stop trolls. Oh, that is such a good feature. I did not realize that was coming to YouTube. That'll really, really help shut down trolls, as well as promote people to be like, look, you want to be part of the conversation, you know, you gotta click subscribe, you know. I don't think we've gotten access to that. Yeah, right now I only have allow paid members, only paid members to participate. So I don't have that feature just yet. So hopefully we get that very, very soon. Would you go back to Destiny and Purple? We would never go back to Purple full time, but I would certainly go back to playing and covering Destiny if I got unbanned. 100%. He also responded to requests about raids and membership gifting too. Oh, really? Let's see. The feature is still in beta at the time of writing and has only been made available to a small number of streamers, but for the lucky few who are on it, the process of setting up is pretty straightforward. From the live control room page, streamers just click edit, followed by live chat, and they can edit the setting. Oh, wait, hang on. That I might not have checked the right space, though. Hang on, let me see. Edit, live chat. Yeah, I don't have it. I can do only members may send messages. I don't have that just yet. Live redirect is still only my videos. Monetization I can change mid as well. So I forgot I could do that right there. That's a really quick menu I forgot about. That's actually kind of nice. So yeah, that's a feature that we don't presently have. It was cryptically promised more to come in the coming months, but he also took replies to respond to queries about much desired streaming features that come standard on the Purple platform, like raiding, which sends viewers to go watch another streamer's channel at the end of a broadcast, and the ability to gift subscriptions to users. He was still tight-lipped about the specifics of upcoming features for the platform, but he assured streamers in the replies that they hear our creative community on the live streaming feature request, perhaps suggesting that some of the features might be on the way. While the announcement is certainly an exciting one, an air of impatient disappointment pervaded some of the replies, with the highly requested feature only being rolled out to a handful of streamers while the team collects feedback and tweaks the service. Many other creators just have to watch from the sidelines. Many users called out on this, bringing up the clips feature, which is still not available to all users after commencing its rollout in January. Still, even if the process of getting the feature out to everyone on the service is a slow one, fans of YouTube are no doubt thrilled to start seeing some of Purple Platform's best features manifest in the streaming platform of choice. Whether it's enough to turn the tide of the battle between the two streaming services, though, remains to be seen. Yeah, that's a bummer. That's a bummer that we still don't have clipping here. That's a bummer that we don't have that. Yeah, so if we can get access to clipping and those kind of controls, and if I could start raiding the gaming channel, we would be in an amazing position. We would be in such an amazing position if we could start raiding the gaming channel. Yeah, there it is. Think everyone wants to know if raiding will become a feature of live streaming. YouTubers live raiding each other, and then also as well as gifting memberships. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Those are apparently, hopefully, right on. You didn't know I caught that if we had it, I'd called you at 3 a.m. if we've gotten that one. Yeah, I mean, subscriber only is nice because that's not a paid thing. It would be nice to be able to filter chat like that. At the very least, you know, getting folks to do it. What is Lodo reading? That's what I was reading. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Unfortunately, yeah, I can't see that gentleman's tweets because in the midst of everything that happened last summer, he blocked me. And, you know, that's always a little concerning, but, you know, yeah. Yeah, and mod tools. Yeah, there's like no moderation tools over here at all. It's really, really non-existent. So another comment on our daily poll. I am most interested in the Division Heartland. Been a fan of the franchise since launch day of Div 1. Interested to see what Red Storm comes up with. They have been previously involved with a lot of the PvP aspects of the franchise. That points even more to a potential battle royale. You know, I would think that what you just said is a pretty big indication that maybe what's happening. At the very least, it'll be PvP oriented. You know what I mean? You know, I didn't catch the beginning, but I hope the stream has been going well so far. Oh, thank you. So the fact that it's the team that worked on a lot of PvP stuff for Division, you know, that's an indication that this is probably where this is headed. So, Japanther, I can't imagine the pressure Halo devs must be feeling at this point. So much is riding on this title. Unfortunately, I don't think Halo Infinite can live up to the hype. I don't think. It's been too long. It's been way too long in development. And then that was even indicated by the ex employee, by the leak. It's been in development for too long. I mean, I don't know what you guys in chat think, but for me, when a game's in development that long, I'm always worried about it just isn't going to live up to it. People are going to have to wait too long. They're going to be way overly critical. They're going to rip through it because they've just been waiting for such a long time. I just don't think it can at this point. They pulled RS. Ubi pulled RS from Division 2, and the DZ was basically ignored by Massive for over a year now. I'm pretty ticked to see their name on that article. Really? I mean, but if they got pulled from it, I mean, that, you know what I'm saying? I don't... If they got pulled from it, why would you be upset to see them on it? I don't know. You know what I think? Yeah, I know what you think, Eugene. If with the Halo Infinite situation, I never want to see a franchise do poorly. I never want to see a franchise do poorly. You know, it's. I want to see franchises be successful. I want to see games sell lots of copies, especially an established franchise. Even if I'm not huge in the franchise, I want games to do well. It's good for the industry. It's good for gamers. Why would you not want that? You know, and you know that's why, you know, the troll that kept coming in saying I was bashing Infinite. It was like, I wasn't bashing Infinite. I was worried. I mean, I'm not seeing anything that looks promising. From them. You know, both their focus on, you know, what they were focusing on, but also, you know, how they've now structured some of their workflow. It's like, okay, so they were working simultaneously on the new engine and the game, and they somehow thought that they were also going to be able to push out that trailer and impress people. It's like, who greenlit that? Who saw that trailer and that gameplay and thought, yeah, we need to show this to the public? You know, I don't know. The whole thing is concerning up to this point. And to have an ex-employee basically be like, yeah, people are working through crunch. It's not going to be an epoch-changing game. It'll be a good game, but it's not going to be this massive shift. I would be very, very worried if I was a fan of the franchise. Like, it's a one thing to be a fan of the franchise and to be pulling for it. It's another thing to be like, oh no, it's going to be amazing, even though you've seen virtually nothing about the game up to this point. Other than a bad trailer and some blog posts from the devs. So the way I always land on these situations is I want games to be successful, but I'm never going to sit here and blow smoke. You know what I mean? I never want people to be like thinking that I'm sitting here bashing, you know, bashing a game or whatever. So I'm gonna get Lono's attention to my last post. It's being taken out of context. I don't know what you're talking about. I've not read or responded to anything you've said recently. BMAC says the Division Heartland is the topic that interests me the most. I even signed up for the early test phases on their site. Nice. Yeah, hopefully you can get in there. I know there's going to be NDAs and stuff, so I wouldn't be able to cover it. But I'm always interested. I just can't plant my flag. We were talking about this earlier today. I can't plant my flag in PvP games. It's not possible. I just can't do it. There's There's way too many. There's way too many authorities on PvP games, and that's just not my world. It just isn't. And whenever you're going to establish your content and you're going to have a content flow, if you start to break from that content flow, it needs to be at least in close proximity. And I don't think PvP games are the move. Even though I would love to play Apex and I would love to do all these different things, it's just most of the time people coming for my content, they're not going to be looking for me to be talking about or giving, you know, tips about or playing PvP games. Now, when I was hosting and doing shoutcasting, sure, that would have been a regular thing, you know, shoutcasting and observing games. It gives you an opportunity to see a game from a very, very informed perspective. And I tried to bring that whenever I shoutcasted Trials or Fortnite or Apex or any of the games that I was kind of dipping my toe in. And one of the losses we've suffered is that, like, I can't put myself in that commentator position right now because it's not a very likely future for me in the business. So it's like, man, I can't do it. I can't plant my flag in Apex Legends and play it and talk about it. I can report on the news, but game time in it and in investing in it, that's just not an authoritative position that I'm in at the moment. Maybe long term that'll change. Same thing with Division Heartland. If Division Heartland comes out and is very, very PvP focused, BR focused, I can obviously critique it, look at it, make my own predictions, but I can't really do I can't really devote a lot of time to it. It just doesn't fit with what we do. So Mike Faz says, I am interested to find out what the Division Heartland actually is. Same. I can only hope it is some sort of spin-off to the survival mode they had in Div 1. Andrew says, I like the Division franchise, took a break from it, but I'm curious to see this Heartland. Agreed about details. It's funny that it has the least amount of votes, but it's getting the most comments from you guys. That's actually pretty funny that all of the comments have been about the Division and the Heartland. Here's one from Butters about Crunch. It amazes me that companies still don't know that Crunch hurts them. Maybe in 5 years they will learn to either delay or not announce games until they are in the final polish phases. It's amazing how they never learn. It seems that way. It to me, at this point, why would you not? How many games are, like, think about what was recently stated publicly by the makers of Dying Light 2. They essentially said, we announced our game too early. Like, they're saying that. Why? Because, like, it's taking them longer. They're not in a position. They're not in a position to talk about the game. They're not in a position to reveal anything or move up launch date. You know what I mean? I don't know. I posted a thread from Halo. It seems that people are doing the transition, only translated the last part of the video. I don't know where you posted that thread, Raikou. Did you post it in gaming news? I'm not sure. I'm not sure exactly what you're talking about. You can't post links in my stream, so I'm not. I'm confused as to what you mean. Next comment here from Grim Brother. It's been too long since we had a new Halo title. I don't think Crunch is inherently evil. Almost every industry has it. Doesn't make it right or pragmatically smart. It doesn't make it right that everyone's doing it, and it also doesn't mean it's pragmatically smart. Like, it's not necessarily good, you know, for the people working there or for the product. Like, from a business standpoint, it is not a smart move, I don't think. The 343 Halo thing. Okay, that's just a Reddit thread. I mean, I'm not going to read a Reddit thread right now. I try to pull up articles only for news. Many of these decisions are driven by the need to impress shareholders and or investors. Timelines are super, you know, super, super crunched and limited. You know, pre-production is a huge factor as well. You know, they spend too much time on pre-production, and then they don't leave the engineers and the developers enough time to get everything done. I don't know. I suppose it's rolled out to everyone now, and I was interested in the guy's response. Someone in the thread. No, the sub-only feature is not rolled out to everyone. I don't have that feature right now. That is not available to me. They're rolling that out. Clips is also still not available to everyone, which is really annoying. Eventually, we're supposed to be able to use the mobile app to create a short from any video, which would be really, really helpful for the Shorts channel. I could start to create shorts from funny moments in the stream that happen, or very intentionally place content within the content, write down the timestamp, and go back and grab the short later. You know, these are all things that, you know, we'd be able to potentially go back and do, which would be good for content creation. And we still don't have those. The Shorts thing is literally in a Google YouTube help doc. It talks about it as if you should be able to do it right now, and I can't. I go on the mobile app and I can't make a short from an existing video. It's not possible. So I'm a little worried, you know, YouTube's trying to do too much at once. They're trying to invest in shorts and like that TikTok crowd, but they're also trying to invest in live streams, and it's just, they're very, very different approaches to creating content. And so I would be worried that would end up being problematic with the stuff that they're rolling out. You know what I'm saying? So it's in the comment thread. Yeah, I'm not going to go and read a comment that you made. There's no reason for me to do that. You see, you're sending me on a wild goose chase in the middle of a recording, homie. I am not concerned that somebody on Reddit is misreading your statement. That's not a concern of mine. I'm not trying to be dismissive and rude, but you're being one of those like pesky chatters. Like, I'm not going to go read that. Jordan Smith with a $5 tip. Watched the past VOD last night. Love what you were saying about the notifications. I had to turn mine back on, and I watch the VOD every weeknight. Well, thank you. Yeah, we don't know why that's happening. If you're new and you enjoy this content and you hit sub and the bell button, or you're a longtime subscriber and you have the bell button check, you're going to want to periodically check that bell button. It's getting turned off, and for some people, it's getting switched to personalized, which, if you don't personalize it, you're just going to stop getting notifications. So if you want to get notified about my daily stream and the evening upload, you're going to want to make sure that's set to all. It's an unfortunate reality that for the last 2 weeks has tanked our numbers. In just 2 days of talking about it, it's already changed initial turnout on uploads and live streams. And we've only talked about it for 2 days. So unfortunately, there's how many thousands of people that are never going to get notified now, and they're not going to have a clue why. So it's interesting that YouTube seems to be more interested in making features that won't bring in extra cash before they look at gifting. Well, one of the reasons they're looking at the subscriber thing is likely because they're getting ready. This is going to be my hopeful theory, okay? This is Lono's hopeful theory about what's going on. I feel like they are preparing for big streaming updates, and they want to give us moderation, like better moderation tools. And that on its own is a really great moderation tool. If I can instantaneously be like, you need to be a sub here for 2 minutes before you can comment, that turns away so many of the morons and the bots and the drive-by people. There are so many people that disrupt chat or spam chat or do all this nonsense, and they literally do it, and they do it, and they keep on moving. Right? It's one of those things where that might be what's going on. They're wanting to give us a very, very easy, broad reach live stream moderation tool before they start rolling out the bigger changes. Obviously, that's me being ridiculously hopeful, because they don't seem invested in live stream. We were supposed to see really good things first quarter, and we saw clips in January, still not available for everybody. Creating shorts from any stream, still not available to everybody. And now you got rating and hosting maybe on the way, gifted subs maybe on the way, and being able to change chat to not members only, but subscribers only. They were making content for MCC and fixing it, something the community wanted, something you would know if you were in the community. Oh, you're talking about something else. Moderation on YouTube is a joke. You only have two options, either timeout for 5 minutes or ban. Then you have no way to find anybody to unban them. Yeah, there's still somebody today. He's a member on gaming, and I can't unban him over here. It won't let me. I go to his profile, I click the flag, I click unblock, and it doesn't work. I don't know if that's because in the background, they're fiddling with moderation tools, and that's no longer going to be the way that we unban somebody. I have no freaking clue what they're doing. I don't know. Live broadcasting is a growing opportunity for money. So you would think they'd be throwing a lot at it, especially after some of the contracts they signed with streamers to get them to come over here. It's interesting that now, I guess, again, this is me being hopeful. I suppose I would rather it be slow and take time than be something they rush out and have to walk back. Like, Purple Platform is known for this. They're like, hey, we did this thing. And then, like, a week later, they're like, oh, sorry, no one likes it. No one gives a crap. Or it's being received poorly. So I suppose if these things are taking a while to roll out, I would hope that it's because they're taking their time and making sure they're implemented well. And maybe that's why they're rolling it out to just handfuls of channels first to ensure that they work well. I can respect that. As an alternative to what Purple does, they roll out features all the time and then nobody freaking uses them. They're terrible. Do you guys remember? They switched from having stream teams to communities and nobody used either. Neither of them were helpful. And then they did the, you know, getting rid of pre-roll ads and nobody used that. That was a freaking joke. And then they did the multi-stream feature, which only gave one channel all the views, so it would tank the other channel's numbers. Like, they constantly rolled out features over there that were horribly designed. I'd rather YouTube take a while before rolling something out. It seems true. Tried and true things like gifting and better mod tools seems like it's something super predictable and will be well received. Yeah, gifting memberships and having one free membership if you do YouTube Premium, both of those seems like just freaking slam dunks for generating revenue. I don't know. I don't know why they're sleeping on it. Could be a logistical thing in the background. I don't know. I'm a mod for an MMA channel. One of the mods got mad, banned another mod. The only guy who runs the channel could undo it. Was to unmod everyone and give mod status back to everyone. Oh, that's ridiculous. That is so crazy. We, to this day, can't unban this one guy. He got bopped for smarting off way back when we were a little bit more strict. I've kind of leaned into it now. I just kind of troll the trolls, you know, and see if they stick around. And this guy got bopped, and he's like, yeah, I'm sorry, I want to support you, and he subscribed, and he's a paying member on my gaming, and I can't get him unbanned here. It literally won't let me. I go to his channel and do it, and it's like, nope. And I have no way of finding him on my channel to unban him. Like, it's not possible. It's not an option. I go in to see all the people that are banned here, and it's just a ridiculous long list of people. And there's just no way to find him and undo it. No, it wasn't Greg. It wasn't a mod. Let's look at another comment here from the poll. Noberto says, I've always been interested in the Division, but I haven't had time to play it. A free-to-play model might be a better way since they have a bigger pool of players. Free-to-play likely points to being a PvP game and not an RPG. I can't see it being like RPG or loot based. You know what I mean? I really, really can't. It's unlikely. More than likely, they're going for PvP. You know. So this video about the Halo thing, the video made big noise in the foreign communities because it mentioned overtime. This is a bit troublesome, actually. The UP said that the overtime is actually to help 343 speak and said that they are not a lazy studio, but from foreigners, they think that 343 is forcing labor. The foreigners only translated the last part. Okay, well, we can ignore the crunch thing. We didn't heavily focus on the crunch. We focus a little bit more on the fact that the engine wasn't developed at the time that they decided to push out their demo, and then that resulted in the bad reception, which resulted in the delay, which resulted in some people leaving the company, which has resulted in, you know, a lot of speculation now about will this game even be ready to launch, ready to ship, you know? So, I don't know. The trailer showed in June was a POS. Yeah, it was awful. Again, I'm not a hater. I actually liked Halo 5 than a lot of the fanboys. I enjoyed it more because maybe I wasn't a longtime fan. And I'm not trying to be a hater. I thought that trailer was embarrassingly bad. It was so bad that I thought they were doing a Wizard of Oz thing. So you know how in Wizard of Oz, it's all black and white. And then Dorothy opens the door and all of a sudden the world is color. I thought that's what they were doing. I thought they were showing traditional, tried and true, slow, no aiming down sight, very boring Halo combat. I was like, oh, they're showing us this because they're going to ramp things up in a second and they're going to like next genify the trailer. All of a sudden it's going to be very clear like, oh yeah, look at this. And it never happened. I was like, wait, that was it? That was the trailer? That's all we get? That's what I thought they were doing. I thought they were intentionally making it boring and slow and just, you've seen and played this game before. And then they were going to next genify it. And all of a sudden it was going to be like, woof, it was going to, you know, take it up a notch. No, it just was boring from beginning to end. And I remember ending it looking at chat and being like, what was that? Was that it? Was that all there was? There was a half a second where I thought I was watching a remaster of original Halo. I was like, this doesn't even look like a new game. It looked amazing in the cutscene. And then once I got into the combat, I was like, there's nothing here. Like, you know what I'm saying? A 20 spot from Chris H. Have another Friday off so I can catch the content live. Your segments are a favorite part of my weekly grocery shopping. Well, that's amazing. I was told I could go bag groceries, and I get to entertain you while you go grocery shopping. It's a small world after all. There we go. Thanks for the 20 spot, Chris. Gritter with a comment on the poll says, I hope Heartland has elements of survival in it for The Division 2. Lots of folks pulling for that. They want to see that survival stuff come forward. They really want to see it. Yo, what's good, Zubair? There are a lot of folks that think that they want to see it. They want to see them pull that over because survival was very, very praised, and very liked. None of my criticism has been about the game. It's been about how they absolutely failed properly managing their flagship. I've not seen anybody just trashing the game. Tired of the Bungie classic purists thinking Halo needs to be year 2007 for every game. Well, and I don't think anybody here is making that argument. I mean, what I saw in the trailer looked like that. It looked like they were trying to appeal to, you know, longtime fans that just want another Halo. You know, it didn't look like anything elaborate or innovative or evolved. Like, I said this in my Doom to Fail video because they were talking about the grapple and how much time they put into the grapple and what the grapple meant. And I was like, it's just a grappling hook. I mean, it's just a grapple. Like, if that to you is huge, massive amount of work, just a game changer, you got to think about why that is. It's because Halo as a game is stuck in many respects. This gets busy, but let me give you my theory on what happened. Halo became massively successful, and in becoming successful, it put itself into this very predictable box of it needs to be slow movement, it needs to be very, very controlled, because consoles and controllers are not going to be able to handle an Unreal Tournament or Quake style fast moving combat. It's just not going to work. So they made a very, very controlled game. Now the danger when you do that is the popularity of Halo meant that the games that followed had to stay close to that lane, or you would be accused of kind of becoming something else, right? And that would be essentially all you'd be getting is another very predictable Halo. Unfortunately for Halo, shooters and the innovation within gaming have left Halo in the dust, right? And because of that, Halo has a choice. They either completely break from what everyone's expecting, which is extremely risky, or they just deliver another really, really solid Halo game, which means, as the guy that, you know, spoke out, this ex-employee, it's not going to be epoch-defining, it's just going to be a solid Halo game. Blame the classic fans. They want 343 to stick to Bungie's shadow and they're not allowed to move forward. This is not something to blame on classic fans, homie. This is a constant... This is a perpetual conundrum that all established franchises face. Call of Duty faced this. They tried to innovate with Black Ops 3 with like supers and ultimates that were very inspired by Destiny and other games at the time. And then Advanced Warfare with double jumps and wall running and all this other stuff. And what did everybody say? This is trash. We want boots on the ground. We want Call of Duty. You are always, always stuck in the, if you innovate too much, then the game is not true to itself and your fans turn on you, which is dangerous. That's dangerous because they always are going to make up the majority of your purchases. And you're doing it hoping you get enough people to fill the funnel to replace them if they stop playing or don't buy or whatever. So they always are going to be stuck. Now, the reason Halo is in a more, I would say, restrictive position is because it got super popular at a time where that gameplay style and that loop worked. But now, with the dawn of Fortnite and Apex and Titanfall and all these other shooters that run great on console and people enjoy, and they're fast, they're more high octane, they're more quick moving, Halo feels like you're watching a game in slow motion. It doesn't feel like a game that lands on the modern landscape. It feels like a dinosaur. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, they don't have a choice. Their game got super popular at a time where that worked. That doesn't work anymore. So, as I've said previously in my predictions, Halo Infinite will sell just fine. It will be likely praised by long-standing fans and have a very committed player base. It will not bridge the gap between old and established fans and new or maybe skeptical fans. That's not going to happen. I just don't think so. I would love to be proved wrong. This would be a great time to prove me wrong, man. It lands and it's just amazing. The new engine, the gameplay, all of it just delivers an absolute knockout of a game. A really, really good example of a game that I feel like contextualized itself into the modern landscape but was still faithful to itself was Doom. Doom did an amazing job. Now, Marauders can die in a fire, but both Dooms that released, 2016 and the most recent one, Doom Eternal, I believe they did an excellent job honoring their roots and where they came from while also completely evolving and innovating the gameplay, the content, the loop, the way the combat feels, all of it. Doom did an exemplary job of contextualizing their game into the gaming landscape that we exist in right now. Resident Evil is doing a good job with that. We're going to be playing Resident Evil 8 later today. Resident Evil 7 did a really good job of contextualizing the Resident Evil format and content, right? They did a great job of doing that, of bringing it forward and making it feel like a more modern game while still honoring where they came from, right? Halo's not doing that from where I sit. When I look at a trailer for Halo Infinite, I'm like, this literally could be a 10-year-old trailer that you dressed up with better resolution and textures. You see what I'm saying? Like, it would be the armchair person. If you'd have showed me that footage and asked me, what do you think this footage is for? I would have been like, probably a remaster of a Halo game I've never played. It's got to be an older game that they've remastered or updated or something. It didn't look like they, like when we saw gameplay for Doom the first time, you know, Doom 2016, when we saw that gameplay, everyone was just jaw on the floor. Holy moly. Not only is that Doom, that's a Doom for today. There was no denying that the game had jumped leaps and bounds forward. Nobody in their right mind was going to say that about Halo Infinite's gameplay that they showed off. And I think and believe it's unavoidable. I don't think you can avoid it. There's only one way to bring Halo into the future. It would have been to give it a feel closer to almost like a Destiny Apex hybrid. Let's say Destiny Titanfall hybrid. That would have been the best way to bring Halo forward. And longstanding fans probably would have turned on it. They'd have been like, no, this isn't Halo. Too fast. It's too fast. This feels and looks like Titanfall. This feels and looks like Destiny. I don't like this. So that would have been the risk, because they would have done that, and people would have been able to say, well, it's a modern Halo. It's a contextualized version of Halo into the landscape that we exist in now. And your classic Halo purists, your old school fans, would have been like, this is garbage. I don't want it. The mass scapegoating of classic Halo purists is a garbage take. Infinite's development failures are being noted by gaming communities at large. Fanboys are not to blame for the en masse caution. I don't want to sit here and act like it's the fanboys' fault, but I think it is an unspoken constant. An established franchise will always be shackled to the skeleton of its predecessors. Always. To one degree or another. To greater or lesser degrees, every established franchise is, in some measure, shackled to the skeleton of their predecessors. Like, they cannot go too far. It's like the leash on your dog. He can run in a circle around the tree, he can dart at the mailman, but whoop, it's gonna yank him back, and he's gonna be coughing and choking and gagging. Halo can only run so far from what they are shackled to, and if they run too far, they're going to fall on their face, and the core audience is going to turn, betray it, not support it, and it's a disaster. Revenue, projected sales, all of that falls flat. I believe these are realities that cannot be fought against. They're like forces of nature. It's like forces of nature. Like, you can't fight against this. You've got to lean into it, and you've got to try to innovate where you can and to make changes where you can. I remember when Destiny came out, I was like, wow, this is like an online world for Halo. Right. The old games are the reason we want more Halo. I truly think that a lot of the long-standing fans have just romanticized and have rose-colored those old games. They're not as good as you think. They were good at the time. They were excellent at the time. But they're not as good as you think. It's like when you go back and watch action movies from the 90s, you're like, oh my gosh, this is corny and bad. Holy moly, I thought this movie was amazing when I first watched it. You go back and play those old Halo games, you're going to be like, ooh, wow. This was groundbreaking at the time, but it's pretty boring, man. It's not that good. It's really, really not that good. You know? It was groundbreaking at the time. And it isn't anymore. Like, go back and play GoldenEye. Go back and play the first two Halos. Go back and play the very, very first Gears of War. Just no. No, they're not that great. They're not. I go back and play Halo on Master Chief Collection all the time. Yeah, but you don't necessarily... I don't think that you do that because the game is so earth-shatteringly good. It's because of the nostalgia. It's because of the nostalgia. Halo 1 and 2 are 10,000 times better than Warzone. Like, you made me read that. I read that out loud. Like, I actually read that out loud. I read that and people heard me say it. Come on, man. Come on. It's so much more liberating to be honest about games that you love. Just be honest. It's so much easier. This entrenched fanboyism, it's exhausting. Like, admit that games you played 10 years ago or more are not that great now. Like, just admit it. There's a metamorphosis that has happened. Your expectations, your desires, what you expect from depth, movement, crispness, and freshness, and a sense of empowered, like, control of the character. Come on. Those games are not that great. They're not. They don't stand the test of time. Now, I said the other day, Titanfall 1 and Titanfall 2 especially. Titanfall 2 is like the Helen Mirren of shooters, okay? It's aged incredibly well. But it's, come on. Not very many games do that. They don't. And Titanfall 2 lines up with so much of what you can do right now in a video game. Apex Legends, go play it. It's so similar to what you can do in Titanfall 2. So few games from back in those eras even hold a candle to what games are now with respect to depth, quality, movement, the precision. Go back and play Borderlands 1. It is truly awful with respect to the controls and the ADS and the target acquisition. It's bad. It's real bad. But people will go back and play Borderlands 1 and be like, this is so awesome. This is so awesome. They updated it. Well, I mean, if they made an update and they cleaned some of it up, sure. But before you do that, go back and play an untouched version of BL1. Okay. Ugh. It's not that good. It's not that good. It's GoldenEye is still good. Come on. You have to understand, you don't have the same brain that you did back then. You're a different person now. You're a different gamer. I'm telling you, it's liberating to admit those games were 10 out of 10 at the time. If you transplant them to today, they're not a 10 out of 10 anymore. It's like when they make those time travel movies and some guy from the 1920s all of a sudden shows up and just doesn't fit with anything that's happening in the modern era. It's easier to go back and just be honest that these games are not as good as you might think they are. And that's one of the challenges of an established franchise. They got to do two things, and these things are almost impossible to do at the same time. They got to be true to their roots, and you're expecting the same experience you had back then. You had never played a game like Halo 1 and 2. You had never played a game like Gears of War 1. You had never played a game like that before. So there is a transformative property that happens to you while playing it. Your expectations, your emotions, your dopamine levels are at a level that can't be replicated if I copy pasta that game format 10 years later. It's impossible. It's impossible. They cannot stay true to those roots and give you that almost metamorphosis-like experience in playing the game. Why? Because you've already had that experience. This is the Call of Duty syndrome. You've already played a Call of Duty campaign like this before. It's not moving the ball forward that much. So you're like, this is just another Call of Duty. It's pretty boring. Call of Duty pivoted away from campaigns for a reason. It wasn't really the draw, and it wasn't really what made people buy the top the releases anymore. So whenever you have an established franchise, it will always in some measure be shackled to the skeleton of its predecessors. And when that happens, you're always going to find it to be a little lacking. Breath of the Wild is another really good example of I consider to be a great contextualization of an old game into the modern era, right? Modern Warfare Remastered was a huge success, but that game doesn't hold up now, huh? I don't know what point you're making. Are you refuting your own points about Halo, or are you taking a dig at Call of Duty? Either it's a dig, or you're admitting the same thing is true of Modern Warfare, which means the same could be said for Halo. And here's the thing. What I am saying is not me being a hater or me being like, oh, I'm knocking the game. I'm just being honest about the truth of games back then. It's so easy. It's so much easier. That's why I don't want Half-Life 3 to come out now. It's been so long, it'll never live up to the expectations generated by the previous titles. The reason I think you're wrong, Legend, about Half-Life 3 is first-person shooters and the graphics and the photorealism. I think they could make an absolutely incredible Half-Life 3 now. It would make Half-Life 2 and Half-Life 1 seem like dinosaurs. I think it's different when it's single player. It's very, very different when it's single player and it's just more of like a first-person shooter. Halo's in a different category. Because like, if you suddenly were really fast and moving and had all these tools and equipment in Half-Life, I don't think that would happen. I don't think people would crap on it and say it's not like the predecessors. Halo's in a different category altogether. Its identity is too woven into slow-moving, non-verticality, lead-footed combat. I don't know. People love Half-Life because it's cool too. Changed my mind, the game is terrible. Half-Life 2 is not terrible. No, that's actually a very good game. Original Half-Life, maybe. That one probably hasn't aged too well. I think Half-Life 2 has probably aged reasonably well. It's not going to blow your socks off. You're not going to understand why it's so popular, but it's not going to feel as dated as the first one would, I would think. So we got to end the recording. We got to move on. This was a good debate. My lunch sitting in front of me, and we still have to do the micro topic about did they nerf the horror in Resident Evil 8? If you're watching this, my uploads of Focus Topics hit at 5 p.m. Eastern, so make sure you're subscribed with the bell button. Check your bell button. It's been getting unchecked, okay? So if you're here right now, stick around. We'll be doing that next. And if you're a new sub or an old sub, again, you're going to want to regularly check that bell button. People are not getting notified because YouTube pushed out an update and switched it to personalized. Make sure it's on all and you won't miss these uploads. If you're listening to this recording elsewhere, always come check us out live at sntrlive.com.